Morning, everyone. Welcome to Dev 304. Today I'm going to be talking a little bit about adding value using VSTO. So when I start thinking about adding value to something, especially in a software development project, I start thinking about how can I make what the users are using better for them? Like, how do I improve their user experience? How do I enable them to do their job better? Take time cards, for instance. Who here actually likes filling in their time cards? Obviously, not many people do time cards because everyone I know hates it. So the general common solution for time cards is the company will go build a time card portal or something like that, and it allows you to log in and quickly and easily fill out your timesheets. This helps, but once again, it's another service, it's another portal, it's another login potentially. You keep adding these different services, and it becomes painful because as someone doing your job, you've got to be able to log into CRM, you've got to be able to log into SharePoint if you have that, you've got to log into or your consultant portal or whatever it is that you submit your timesheets in, and it becomes hard to juggle all these things. Where I see today we're going to be talking about Visual Studio Tools for Office in particular, and what that allows you to do is write managed add-ins for Office applications using .NET code. And the way to think of it is really macros on steroids. You can do everything you can do with macros, except it's a nice .NET assembly, easy to deploy with via click once, and it's sort of the next generation of how to integrate Office and add value. So, talking about timesheets, my last employer, one of my jobs I had to do there was rewrite this old timesheet system, and it was actually an Outlook add-in. And we go in and we can create a appointment, select the client, and it's all in a piece of software that you, like the users, use every day. It avoids you switching context. Another option is getting emails, that sort of thing. Just integrating a software project with an existing, something that everyone uses every day. I see that as adding a lot of value, and that's where I believe VSTO can lie, is you've got a nice, one of the areas I see it can help you out is you've got a nice big software project you're working on. Expose some of that data to the end users and get them to buy in. Give them a sneak preview of what's most important to them. And then they can dive in. So today's going to be mainly, it is a level 300 session, but there's going to be, we'll go through a few of the basics, but there's really so many tutorials, so many code snippets. There's a whole section on MSDN just dedicated to VSTO, and I really didn't want to just regurgitate that stuff. I wanted to try and point out some of the areas that you can go wrong and give you some real, some things that hopefully won't, like, will even go past VSTO development and just help your development in general. Before I get started, a little bit about myself. My name is Jake Ginnivan. I've been doing software development for only about 7 years or so now, and I started at working in a little computer shop, and my first bit of code I wrote was actually automating price list updates using Excel automation. So a great way to actually start doing development, start doing something really, really potentially painful. Now I'm a senior developer for Redify and do all sorts of different things for them, mainly rich client and those sort of things. I also do a heap of open source work. Firstly, I'm doing a heap of Windows Phone stuff at the moment. I'm creating two projects, an MVC framework for phone and an Essentials project. Funnelweb, it's a nice blog engine, uses MVC3, Razor, those sort of things. Quite interesting. DBUp, spun off Funnelweb, helps you keep your databases up to date and really nice way to manage your database upgrades. I'm also doing UI automation stuff. So if you're doing any automation, MS Test Contrib now has a whole heap of UI automation helpers for coded UI. And finally, the one relevant to this talk is I'm doing VSTO Contrib. So what that allows you to do is it gives you a better, well, I think it's a better model that you can take VSTO to the next level, and you can start doing some really, really cool stuff and simplifying the program model with it, programming model rather. Yes, Arrow. So I've sort of broken up today into three parts, just a bit of an introduction to VSTO, what it can do, how it works, what's available out of the box, those sort of things. Then I'm going to continue on to developing. Actually, let's dive in to see how a few of these things work. What's the designer experience give you versus the ribbon XML experience? There's multiple ways you can do things. Let's dive in and see what's the difference between them, what are the pros and cons of each of them. And finally, I'm going to talk a little bit about improving testability and maintainability, and this is really where the VSTO Contrib stuff comes in, because by default, VSTO is very hard to write tests for. Just before we actually get going, there's a few things that I'll probably drop in my talk and use this terminology, and if those of you that aren't aware might lose you. So the first one is inversion of control. So inversion of control is letting something else give you your dependencies. A great way is to look at it is instead of going new some service that needs a database connection, inside the constructor, you ask for an iDatabase provider, something like that, and something else gives it to you. It allows you to do unit testing and mocking frameworks, and the IOC container, or inversion of control, takes that control away from you and enables you to do dependency injection, which is get given what you need rather than go ask for it. And it just, once again, it's a technique that enables testability rather than using statics and those sort of things. The next one is technical debt. One thing I see with a lot of VSTO projects is people really struggle with adding features to it after a while. The code gets really bogged down. Difficult to update, those sort of things. Technical debt is quite similar to financial debt, where if you're paying, you're trying to pay back the debt, after a while, if you've got too many interest payments, you're only paying off the interest. You never actually get to the principal. Technical debt's the same. If you've got really complex code, you spend a heap of time just trying to get that code, like add a feature, and you're breaking old code, and you're not adding value anymore. And finally, there's the concept of single-threaded and multi-threaded apartments. This is really relevant to VSTO, and this is one of the reasons why everyone complains that Outlook always locks up. All Office applications actually run in what's called a single-threaded apartment, and it basically means that whenever you interact with the Office object model, it doesn't matter what thread you're running on, if you're on a background thread or foreground thread, it will always, that call will get marshaled to the foreground, like the Office thread, that work will be done, then it will return back. And that's really, really expensive. But the whole of the Office product has been built on around this model, and this is why it continues to lock up and have so many performance issues. As .NET developers, we actually are very used to working in a multi-threaded apartment model. With VSTO, before I can really explain what it is and how it works and what it gives you, we've got to talk about what actually is underneath it. And that's actually the Office Interop model. The Office Interop allows you to do Office automation. So if you want to open up a Word document, manipulate some content, then save it out, programmatically generate documents on servers and stuff, even though you shouldn't do that, that's tended to be the way that people have done it. But it's all unmanaged. It's all unmanaged code. You've got no garbage collection, all reference counting, that sort of thing. And we talk to it via cominterop. VSTO, on the other hand, is actually managed code. It's a whole set of managed extensions and designers and a whole runtime as well that is all written in .NET and extends the Office automation model and allows us to write really seamlessly and easily a add-in for Office in managed code and get all the nice things like garbage collection and all the really nice features of .NET that we're used to without having to worry about a whole lot of implementation details of Office. It abstracts away a whole lot of complexity and gives you a really nice experience. A lot of designer support, that sort of thing. So I'll just quickly jump into a bit of a demo. Okay. So in Visual Studio, you can actually just go straight to the Office templates. And there's a whole heap of templates available to you. There's actually two types of add-ins you can do. So the first one is a Excel workbook, and that's called a document level add-in. That's much the same as an embedded macro in a, say you've got an Excel spreadsheet and you're writing embedded macros that belong to that spreadsheet and that spreadsheet alone. You can actually write a VSTO add-in where you specify what the file name is and, silly security warning that we have to run under admin. Sorry about this. That only happens on document level add-ins. When it starts. So try that again. Jump in here, go workbook, create a new workbook, say you have to allow it. That then makes some security modifications. I think that only happens the first time you do it. And you get a nice, rich experience. You basically get Excel inside of Office, but you've got access to all the code behind of all these different sheets, and you can hook in and wire up your own events. You can pretty much do whatever you want. It's a much richer object model than you get with rather than macros. And it's just a nicer experience in general. The next one you can do is the application level add-in. So application level add-ins are installed into the software itself. So they'll affect every time you open an Excel spreadsheet, this add-in will load up and you can do whatever you want. It's a really good way. Some of the better ones, add-ins I've seen, is I know Microsoft, for a lot of their proposals and things, they will do a go through and they've got ribbons where they select their client out of CRM, what different services they're offering, that sort of thing. Allows you to really quickly do some cool stuff that helps your Office staff out. Another example, obviously, is the time cards one I mentioned before. And Microsoft also provide the CRM add-in to synchronize contacts and appointments and those sort of things. Quite handy. In here, you've got two methods that you really want to know about. This add-in startup. When your add-in starts up for the first time, you can hook in, provide, get access to the document that's currently open, those sort of things. You can then also jump in and add a few different, they've got a whole heap of inbuilt templates. So the first one is the ribbon. This is really probably the most important one because most add-ins will hook into the ribbon and provide some way to manipulate a document and callbacks. So many different things you can do. The designer gives you a really cool experience where you can jump into the properties and select the ribbon type. So there's no magic strings. You get a nice design time experience. Well, that's not quite true. You do have some magic strings there for selecting the different types of ribbons. And that's mainly for compatibility reasons. Different versions of Office have different ribbons available and that sort of thing. We get really nice experience where we can just put things on the ribbon, drag and drop, double click, that sort of thing. Gives you a really familiar .NET model. And it abstracts us away from what's actually happening under the covers is we've got ribbon XML. And this is the other option you've got where it generates you an XML file, which you can then mark up and do the same thing. That gives you a lot more power. We'll go into that a little bit later in the talk. That's just a quick run around what you can, the designer support and a few things. So why I said integration, one of the little demos that I've whipped up before is Twitter integration. Really simple concept. You've got a contact in Outlook, and then you put in their Twitter handle, hit save. Every time you open that contact up, you get their tweet stream down the side. Nice, simple way of bringing data that's relevant straight into the applications you're working in. Now, that's a trivial example, but you can start thinking about the ways you can add value from that. One of the biggest problems that I see, and I try and answer quite a few VSTO questions on Stack Overflow, is around the different the contexts that you have. So in all Office applications, you have the window. That's pretty standard. I'll refer to that as the view. Makes it standard across all the different applications. You've then got the document, which that could be also the worksheet, or in Outlook, it could be the contact or the mail item or anything, really. Then got the ribbon and a custom task pane. So all of those different things have different lifetimes and they're managed differently and there's different ways to hook into them. Getting all of those things talking and collaborating in a really nice fashion is quite difficult. If we apply the same concept to Outlook, right? You've got the view, which is called an inspector in Outlook. Down the bottom, you've got an attached, form region. That's the one. So that's an attached form region. You can drop it down. It's quite similar to a custom task pane, behaves much the same, but there's a few different versions of them. So that one's the attached one. You've then got a complete page one, and you can switch between them here. And if you click on any of those, you can add new ones, or you can actually overwrite and replace any of those. Outlook has some cool extensibility features where you can define your own types of items, and then you can provide new inspectors and all the stuff that goes along with it. So CRM orders, opportunities, those sort of things. You'll see you get really nice, you can really do some cool integration there. I'll just jump in and give you a bit of an idea of the possible complexities you can face. So it's not working very well. So if we open up Word, it's quite a good example. A lot of the complexities, we've got a window here, so we'll call that the view. We've got our document, that's our context. I can open up a new window. Now I've got two views representing the same context. You then add additional complexity with, let's open up a... custom task pane. So the custom task pane is registered on a view. But a lot of the time when you're doing add-ins, a lot of the ones I've seen, you've got a custom task pane that relates to a document, but you've got to register that custom task pane with every window. And this is where the complexity starts coming in. You also only get one hook in Ribbon XML for the ribbon. So you've got one ribbon for any number of documents and windows. You've then got a document that can have multiple windows. You've got custom task panes that can also be hooked into multiple windows. It comes quite overwhelming quite quickly. But that's something that is quite easy to overcome if you make sure you think about it in terms of I've got a view, a context, and understand the different lifetimes that each of them have. I'll dive into how we can make that a bit simpler later in the talk. But it's just something to think about. Is there any questions before I jump on from there? Everyone? Yep.
So that document that you opened and then opened a new window on it.
Yep.
Is that a shared document with Windows, or is that two separate documents?
Yep. So the question was when I opened the two windows here, is it the same document? So it is, because if we type in one view, it happens on the other. So you've got to make sure that in your add-in, if you're hooking in getting the current window, you can you often have to check as the window that I've got a reference to, the actual active window and that sort of things. Otherwise, you may be manipulating the background one. Not what I wanted. Okay. So there's a few things that we can do to make just generally the code better. I was talking about all these different issues with managing your windows. What you still want to do is follow some nice proper development principles. Make sure that your code is abstracted and testable, that sort of thing. We've got our solid development principles, and a lot of those are about basically in programming against an interface, not a concrete instance. And if we start, there's heaps of examples of how to follow solid dev principles. I won't jump into them here. But one of the things we can do is in our ribbon callbacks, instead of putting all our logic in there, move it to a separate project. If we put all our logic in a separate project, it can then become testable. Even if you new up, like in your loaded classes, I go new my application logic, and then from there, all your application can live behind there, or you have multiple classes and you delegate that responsibility to each of those classes. Just by moving that code out of the code behind, you can alleviate a lot of these problems, and inside the code behind, you do all the manipulation of windows, making sure you know who you're talking to, have all that logic that deals with the complexities that come with Office Interop and VSTO, and then let your application logic just do what your application does best. And that way you'll find that your programming model is heap simplified and a lot easier to follow. The next one that I'd really recommend is understanding the basics of COM Interop. There's a lot of the issues where, has anyone done generated Office documents on a server where you use Office Interop? And just quick show of hands, a couple. So how many of you, after you've done this, log into your server and you've got 30 instances of Word or Excel running on your server? Yeah, it's quite a common problem. All of this is due to the interesting side effects of the COM Interop. Once you understand how that all works, you can avoid all of these problems and get your application shutting down every time. Another little side note is after Service Pack 2 on Office 2007, they slightly changed the behavior. So any add-ins or services running that are talking to Excel or Word, they're now don't count. When the user tries to quit or something tries to quit it, it will just shut it down. But you still have potential issues. Quickly just do a 5-minute run over of COM Interop, because I think it's incredibly valuable, and my two things that have happened since I understood this was the performance of my apps went up by quite a bit, and also the stability of them. I no longer had random crashes. Another one that I had in the Timesheets app was as soon as my Timesheet app would do a synchronization, I couldn't resize any of the appointments in my calendar. They would just be absolutely locked. And this is all due to the intricacies of COM Interop. So on the unmanaged side, this is the actual Office objects. They implement whatever interface, so we'll just call it iNew, but that could be an application, it could be a inspector, it could be a mail item, anything that's inside Office. You get your add your reference to the primary interop assemblies, which allow us to talk from .NET to the they represent the types inside of the Office type libraries, and then we've got our .NET client over here. So this is our add-in or our service that's driving this automation. There's this gap in between. that .NET actually does a really, really great job of bridging and making us not have to think about it. There's actually a huge amount of complexity that goes on in here. So what's actually happening is .NET has this thing called a runtime callable wrapper, which also implements the interface that the COM object implements. So we got nice, strongly typed object model to work against. What the RCW does is it actually talks to two interfaces that hang off the COM object. iDispatch, which is used to do any late bound calls, and iUnknown, which does a lot of the description of the type, how it actually works, what methods it has, those sort of things. All we have to do is talk to the RCW, and it gives the impression that we are talking straight to a COM object. There's a lot of complexity that it's actually happening under that. There's a few helper methods that .NET gives us to actually modify and play with this relationship. There's a heap of stuff that lives in this namespace, so much stuff. But on the Marshall class, there's a few methods that are really quite important. The first one you've probably seen if you've done any VSTO development, a huge amount of conflicting information. Some people say use marshall.release com object. All the Microsoft documentation doesn't mention it at all. All of their examples don't use it, that sort of thing. So for me it was quite conflicting, and I spent a lot of time trying to figure it out. This one here, basically, I'll go into more depth in the next slide, but it decrements the reference counter inside the runtime callable wrapper. When that gets to zero, .NET will actually get rid of the underlying COM object. This one here, doesn't matter how many .NET people are referencing that RCW, it just gets rid of them all and releases the underlying COM object. This one is quite interesting, because when Visual Studio 2010 was being developed, they are using WPF now. A huge amount of their services and things were going from COM and unmanaged implementations into .NET implementations. But Visual Studio had this marshall.release COM object littered all through the code base. Problem with that is if you try and call that on a .NET implementation of an interface, the framework will blow up. So in early builds of 2010, you just get random crashes all the time. And a lot of those were actually due to internally the code was trying to release a COM object that was actually a .NET implementation. So the proper way to release it is sort of go, if this variable isn't null and it is a COM object, then release it. So the code gets kind of verbose. And then we're talking about the iUnknown and iDispatch. You can actually get hold of those underlying interfaces if you want and see what they do, have a play around. It's also, in some cases, it can be good to do comparisons of if you've got the same underlying COM reference and those sort of things. Dive into a little bit deeper and understand how the ref counting works. So we've got our COM object here, and then we've got our .NET process. The RCW, because we've got one .NET client, we've got an internal marshalling count of one. We then get a few more things that start. They want access to this. This could be a worksheet. More things that get access to it. You only ever have one RCW for that one COM object, and it counts how many people have access to it. The garbage collector, when this thing gets garbage collected, it also has a finalizer. So one of the real common workarounds that you see is call gc.collect twice. And the reason for that is this RCW actually has a finalizer on it. And the way .NET finalizers work is when it gets garbage collected, if it's got a finalizer, it moves to a queue. The next garbage collection, it then gets cleaned up and the finalizer is called. So you need two garbage collection processes. This is why we want to start working. The way we sort of talk about this is the lifetimes is on the unmanaged side follows a deterministic time where you have to do the in unmanaged land, you have to do the ref counting yourself. You have to make sure you release memory when you're done with it. You don't have a garbage collector that comes along and cleans all that stuff up for you. Up here, we're used to working in a non-deterministic way. At some point in the future, when there's a bit of memory pressure, garbage collector will come along and clean up all the stuff we don't use. So that's using non-deterministic lifetime. What we actually want is when we're dealing with comintrop, we want to work in .NET in a deterministic way. And the way we do this is by calling marshal.releasecom object on, say, the instance of that com object in client 3, and then it'll get released and the internal marshalling count goes down to 2. If we then call that on the other two, internal marshalling count gets down to 0, and then it goes away. Now this is where you start getting into the issues of potentially the exception throws up the RCW's been released from the underlying com object. Who's hit that one a couple of times? Yeah, a few of you. So that one's a really annoying one, because if you overly or too eagerly release these com references, what you end up doing is poisoning the RCW. So you've got a reference to this RCW, but it's already got rid of that com object underneath. Might be 10 minutes, it might be 20 minutes, might be half an hour. They actually go and try and access a property or a method on that RCW, and it blows up. Those are incredibly difficult to debug, and there's a really interesting blog post, if you're interested, on the Visual Studio blog, and it's called marshal.releasecomObject_considered_dangerous. And that was the story about when they were doing 2010, all of those issues they had around marshal.releasecomObject and moving from unmanaged to managed, which may happen in the future as well with Office moving to more managed code. So some rules that I've started playing around with using a wicked little app that Joe down here wrote called LinkPad. So the first one that I try and always follow is never use more than one period in a single line. So you've got this dot here, you've got this dot here. What's actually happening is you've got your application, which this is an Excel application. I then go, I want to grab the workbooks property. So what happens is .NET will create a RCW that's talking to the underlying workbooks object. And then I call the add method on that there. Now what the problem with that is, there's this workbooks RCW now that I don't have a direct reference to in my code. I can't release it, and therefore in Office 2003 or earlier versions of 2007, Excel won't quit. I call quit, it won't quit. And that's why you get so many of these processes hanging around on your services, because of that. And it's really annoying. It's really hard to see. There's no... I'm pretty sure Microsoft wrote a static analysis tool for Visual Studio, but I'm pretty sure they haven't released it. And it just makes it really, really hard. The next one that I wanted to point out is if you get a hold of a com object, don't let it leave the current scope. So in this example, we've got this workbooks one variable. And here, we're putting it out of scope. So it's no longer scoped to the main method. By doing that, I'm now releasing the com object here, and also in this method do something, I'm trying to access it. So if we run this, come on, this is this error we were talking about. The RCW's been, the com object's been separated from the underlying RCW. And the reason for this is we're releasing it here. That poisons the RCW because it's disconnected itself. Now we're calling do something, and because it's going straight up to the field, it's really hard to manage the lifetime of that com object when we should release it. The next one is, I like to sort of think that the person that brought that com object or created the initial RCW or gets reference to these com objects, I consider them the owners of that com object and they're responsible for releasing it. So if you get past a COM object that you haven't got, then don't release it. In this example, you've got some method. I get a workbook passed in. I'm finished, do some stuff with it. I then release it because I'm done with it. Problem is, this method I don't consider to be the owner of that COM object. And so when we release it, once again, that method has poisoned the RCW and we get the same exception. So it's just a couple of little rules to follow. And by keeping everything scoped and always release the COM object as soon as you possibly can, you don't get this problem where Excel or Word or whatever application you're doing won't exit. I should have just stayed out. So the next one I'm going to talk about is the out-of-box experience. We went a little bit into it. Yep?
Sorry, I missed something there. Three rules, I thought.
Okay, so the first rule was the don't use more than one dot. The next one is try not to let a method go, like put it out of scope, because then the scope that created it can't release it. And the third rule was if you get past a COM object, don't release it because you don't own it. So two and three are quite similar, but they subtly different. Snaggy.
So number two and three are scoping issues. Is there some nice wrappers maybe so you can just use statements and things like that to make it a bit more?
I'm glad you asked. I do have that later in my presentation, showing that towards the end about when I start talking about improving testability and maintainability. So I'll quickly just dive into the out-of-box experience. I touched on this a little bit with the ribbon designer versus ribbon XML. So in our ribbon, we've got our designer, we saw that, we get a nice experience. There's drag and drop on all these controls, we get event handlers, those sort of things. Really nice experience. And the other thing that it gives you, if we jump over to the code, one of the best things about it is you can go context. And that will actually give you the current context of whatever you're in. If that's a... if you're in a Word document, that the context will be the window. If you're viewing a contact, the context will be a inspector that's showing a contact. So you get access to that context, which is really, really cool. And that's one of the things that Ribbon XML doesn't give you. If we then dive into the Ribbon XML, there's a few important things we look at. Drop those down. When we first create a Ribbon XML, it gives us this CS proj file with a whole lot of stuff that we have to do in the back end. First one says we want to go back into our add-in and override this create ribbon extensibility object. Let's get rid of some stuff. Don't know why there's four versions, but anyway. And then we return our ribbon callback. Now, this ribbon callback is where all your callbacks for all your ribbons come in. And the problem I find with this is you've got one callback file. If you're, say, doing an Outlook add-in and you provide a ribbon for the appointments and then for the contacts and then for mail items, you then have buttons and different things on each of those different inspectors. They're all in the one class. There's no way to separate that. So you've just got these heap of callbacks that aren't related to each other. And generally, you want to try and keep cohesion really high where you've got all the concepts in a class related. This really violates that quite badly. But the plus side of it is you get a huge amount of huge amount of control over everything. So what happens is you pass it, you give it an instance of that iRibbon extensibility object. When any ribbon loads for the first time, Outlook will actually call in, or whatever Office application will call in, and it'll call this getCustomUI. And what you, it gives you a ribbon ID, so that might be Microsoft.Outlook.Explorer, and then that's the Outlook Explorer window, or it might be Microsoft.Word.Application, or I think it is, and that is the ribbon for Word. And then, so based on that, you can just go, if I have a ribbon ID of Microsoft.Outlook.Explorer, then I can do some other stuff. I can return the Explorer ribbon, ribbon.xml, and then based on other things you can return the different types of XML. This, as I said, has the problem where everything is all in the one, all of the callbacks for all of those different XML all in one file. What you do get as a side effect is under ribbon you've got tabs, you've also got contextual tabs and a few other things. You also have access to context menu items and a huge amount more extensibility than the designer gives you. So for any advanced scenarios, you're actually forced to use the ribbon XML, even though it has these drawbacks. Just to recap on all of that, what the pros and cons of each of them are, is your ribbon designer. It's got context. That's probably the biggest one. Context is really important. You get a button click, you know what window that's associated with, you don't have to map to the current active window, that sort of thing. It's all done for you. It's quite easy. You've got less magic strings than the ribbon XML. And you've got full designer support, and that's really quite cool, and that's what people love. The downside of it is the error handling really sucks. If any of your callbacks throw exceptions, it's just swallowed. There's no global exception handler or anything. You just can't hook into it. A lot of the common workarounds for that is wrap absolutely everything in try catches, or you have to implement a custom iRibbon manager, which is also a fair amount of work, and then you can hook into the different things. It encourages code behind. I have these awful memories of ASP.NET with 1,000 and 2,000 lines of code behind. It's just this unmaintainable mess. A lot of the time that happens with VSTO projects as well. As I said before, try and get that logic abstracted out. Just have what's important to interact with Outlook or Office or whatever the current application is. Have that in the code behind. Get all your application logic out somewhere else that's nice and testable. And also the limited features is sometimes a bit of a pain. On the other side, we've got our ribbon XML. It's really flexible and powerful. You can do absolutely anything with it. You can reset the entire ribbon and redefine it if you want. You can do a whole lot of different things. More features. It's also faster. The ribbon designer has a heap of reflection in it. It's you have performance hits when you first start your assembly. It scans every single assembly that's referenced by your application for ribbons, and that just becomes a little bit heavy sometimes. There are ways to get around it. There's a couple of blog posts. Cons. Biggest con is this one. I hate this one. Single callback file. It drives me absolutely nuts. It just encourages bad code. The other really hurting thing on it is there's no context. You can't just go in a ribbon callback. You can't just grab the current context. You can't set an is enabled. You've got to invalidate the control. There's a huge amount more code just to make it do what you want. It's actually, overall, it's my preferred approach, but it does have some pretty big drawbacks. Talked earlier about Contrib project that I'm doing. One of my aims in it is to hopefully improve this experience. I want to give IOC container support. So you can actually say, if you've got doing a Twitter application. You go in the constructor of your ribbon XML callback, you basically go, I want an iTwitter service, and you just get it. It handles all the wiring up and all that sort of stuff for you. You just have to ask for what you want. Try and simplify that model. We talked about having the view, and then you've got the ribbon, and then you've got the custom task pane and the document. Keeping all those things in sync can be quite difficult. I'm trying to simplify that, so make it very document-centric, because at the end of the day, that's what the user's working on. They're working on a document, they're working with a current contact, they're working with a mail item. You don't really care how it relates to all the stuff around it. It's just really Chrome at the end of the day. And then final one is creating clean, testable code. So a lot of the mocking frameworks already support mocking out of the box of Office interfaces. I know EndSubstitute actually has a few bug fixes in there around making sure you can mock nearly anything. Who's used a mocking framework out of interest? Am I losing a few people? Cool. So mocking framework, basically what you can do is say, I've got this interface. It's a iMail item. Give me an instance of it, even though it's an interface. Just give me a fake instance of it. And on any of those methods or properties, I can say, if someone calls this with these parameters, return this value. It allows you to really easily write code against an interface or anything really and get back what you want without having to do a heap of setup. So we'll show you a quick demo of the ribbon factory in VSTO Contrib. Okie dokie. So in VSTO Contrib, I started doing a while ago. I've got a couple of demo apps in here. One's Facebook integration, so you can synchronize contacts and you can synchronize a point like your events straight into Outlook. That one got a reason. I finished that one at one point and then I broke it again. And I haven't got around to fixing it, but the old code's there, it still works. The next one is this Razor Docs. So I had this cool idea, once again, so many ideas, not enough time to implement them all, where, who does MVC? Who knows about MVC? Cool, lots of people. So Razor's this cool new thing that's come out with MVC 3, where it's a much nicer syntax. That's a cool idea where you could just go at and start putting variables, declaring variables, those sort of things. Inside Word, and then you just go generate, and it connects to a database, fills all that stuff in, generates you a document. Cool idea. It's not really implemented, but the interaction and the stuff with VSTO Contrib is. So I was talking about separate your logic out. Up here, we've got our Razor Docs project. That's the add-in. You can see it's only actually got one file in it, which is the one by default, just this addin.cs. Jump into there, we've got not a huge amount of code. We've just changed the bootstrapper a fair bit. In our startup, we've got these few lines here. We want WPF integration. So WPF integration, I don't know if any of you have tried it, has this really annoying thing that if you show a window and then the user closes that window and then you show it again, Office application crashes. The reason for that is that by default, when you show a window, WPF will actually start up this application for you. It'll just start it up for you. By default, the shutdown mode is when the last window gets closed. So you show a window, user closes it, it actually shuts that app down. You can only run that once inside a single app domain. So that gets into some potential issues. What we want to do is basically say on explicit shutdown, and that gets around that issue. Now we can use WPF inside VSTO in our custom task pane, show windows, those sort of things, have a nice rich experience all within Office. I thought that was quite kind of cool. Another thing that I've got in there is updater. I don't know if anyone's used Click Once. It has the only way to update via Click Once is you can't do it via code. You have to have it checking at startup with Office, and that has some pretty big performance hits. If you've got three, four, five different add-ins, and they're all checking for updates every time you run Office, it really slows down the startup process. This is just a nice little helper that deals with the different security models, and you can just say, check for updates asynchronously. And then when it's finished checking for updates, it just gives you a callback if it's updated or not, and that's all there is to it. By default, ClickOnce gives you shadow copy and all those sort of nice things, so it can update while it's running, and next reboot, it's the new version. So, quite nice. But where we start getting into the ribbon factory is here. So, our create ribbon extensibility object, we actually don't provide our own. We just say, I want to give you a Word ribbon factory or an Outlook ribbon factory or whatever application you're currently running. And it does all of the bootstrapping and handing off the XML for you. There's a little bit of bootstrapping code here. It's all copy and paste in the, when you add the NuGet package, it actually will generate you the code for your project. And this is sort of setting up the context so it has all the information it needs. I had to hijack a couple of methods that when you first start a new project, it says don't modify these are designer files. Yeah, I had to modify them. But it was the only place I could find to get the hooks I needed to do it. I might make this cleaner later, but never know. So I override this begin init method, and I set the current application and give it a factory. So what you can actually do here is, because you're giving it a factory, that hooks up your ribbon view models. Now, what the ribbon view models are is, if anyone has done WPF or Silverlight, you've got, the idea is you've got a view model and some possible model data. The way I'm doing view models in VSTO Contrib is you've got a document, and that document actually has an associated view model. And you'll get one instance of your view model per document or per worksheet or whatever. And that simplifies the relationship. Every time a new user starts up and creates a new document, this will just bootstrap your nice new view model. Pretty simple. Gives you access to the underlying ribbon. So that way you can invalidate your controls to make them if you want to disable them or if you want to add new items to them or whatever you want to do. It also, once again, this is all done with ribbon XML. It also, your view model gives you an initialized method, and that passes you the context. So that gets rid of the issue where your ribbon XML has no context. It'll also give you a callback every time the view changed. So if you had the scenario earlier where we have two windows for the one document, and I'm a user, I switch to this one, it'll call back into that method and say, hey, the current view has changed. So you always keep track of what the current view is. You've got the context. You can now talk to either of those, and it gives the user a better experience and simplifies your code. And then at the end, you can clean it all up. So what does that actually look like? Visual Studio would become responsive again. Sorry, I'm just going to have a drink of water. So what we've got a few things here. We have to mark up using attributes, I know. But you mark up with your view model that it's a Word ribbon view model. Where this becomes handy is inside Outlook, is you've got, we'll have a look quickly at the Facebook one, if I've got it somewhere. No, haven't finished that part yet. The old one does. But what you do when you... Okay. You can say Outlook view model, and then it takes an enum or a string of the Outlook, the ribbon ID, and that way you can actually give a view model for that particular type of ribbon. In here... It's very much related to ribbons as well, because generally you want that interaction, but yeah, it's kind of... I'll continue on, it'll become clearer. So I've also got this interface called iRegister Custom Task Pane. Said there was the issue around if there's multiple windows, you had to register that custom task pane every time. Sometimes there may be multiple custom task panes that you want, that you show and hide via buttons in the ribbon. So what you get is this register task panes. This is actually a delegate. And in here, we pass in a factory to create the control that will be hosted inside that custom task pane. And then we give it a title. So those two things is all we need to do. So in here, it will only take WinForms user controls. So in here, I've got a WPF panel host, that, which comes with it. And then I create my RazorDocs panel, which is the actual WPF control. And then I associate a data context with it, which I've commented out for the moment for some reason. It also gives you nice hooks where you can change the visibility. What it's actually doing under the covers is you've got three windows. Each have their own instance of the custom task pane. It just gives you one, and it deals with, you set a property, it will propagate that change to all of them. So it'll abstract away that complexity for you. And the end result, no, that won't work. If we spin this up, the end result is actually you can click a button on the ribbon. You can also close that and it will change it. One of the really cool things about it, I'll stop going on about it in a sec, I swear, is this is actually a property. When you've used the ribbon XML, the way it works is if I want to enable this, you actually have a callback, get enabled, and then you've got to remember the syntax of that callback. What this is actually doing under the covers is if you provide a property, it will just bind, it'll hook all that up for you, and then it'll listen to iNotify property changed. So if you change that, it'll invalidate all the ribbon controls associated with that property and get them to refetch their value. So it just gets rid of all the nasty stuff, and you can work in a much nicer model. You just raise your properties and it handles all the bindings for you. So that's a quick run over. Any questions about that before I continue? There's not much left, I promise. Getting Snaggy's question now earlier about how to simplify the com cleanup stuff. I should jump straight back into LinkPad. So we'll just quickly go over an example of ref counting again, so you understand the way it works. Is here we create a new workbook, add a worksheet to it, and then get the same worksheet. So that will actually be the same worksheet. Just to prove it, we'll dump as an extension in LinkPad, which just outputs to the output screen whatever the current value of that variable is. It's really cool. So we're dumping the name of sheet number 2. We'll set the name of sheet number 1 and then dump it again, and they'll be the same. We then will release sheet 1. Then we'll try and get the name of sheet 2. We'll release sheet 1 again and then try and get the name of sheet 2. What you actually see is it'll run through. We got sheet 4 is the name. We set sheet 1 to demo sheet, and then it's changed. We then release the first one, and release com object returns an int. That's how many references are left to the underlying com object. So we've got one left. We then release it. That's now 0. There's no references, so it disconnects. And we now get the name, and we get the error. So this is what the code actually looks like if you implement it all properly. You've got to start off and declare all your variables up the top. You then have to wrap everything in a try finally. So we do our create a little app, make it visible, or create a new application, make it visible, add a document, and then set the content hello world. Nice and simple. Okay, So really, really simple. We'll jump over here, and there's these new inside VSTO contrib. I've got a couple of extension methods. So you basically just go with com cleanup. Now there's a downside to this. It makes the when you access the application, you've then got to go resource to get the underlying item, and then but we can play around with it. The other extension method is with com cleanup proxy. Now this doesn't have the issues where you don't have to use resource because it'll use proxy, generate your proxy that implements both the underlying interface and iDisposable to clean up that com object. So if we just go back, this is the code before and then after. There's a huge, it's a far clean, it's far easier to see what you're actually trying to do, I think. There's a little bit of weirdness here, and the reason for that is that in .NET 4, they had this nice new feature where you can use optional parameters if they're also ref. So the Word API is awful. You have to pass everything as a ref. In .NET 4, you don't have to. Problem is, all of my interfaces that I return with the proxies, they are .NET interfaces, so that rule doesn't apply. So you can't use optional parameters with the ref keyword. That's why I have to cast it back to the com interface. But apart from that, Word is the only one that suffers from that. Some additional resources. If you want to have a play around, I'd love feedback on VSTO contrib. Otherwise, more than happy to answer questions on VSTO without it as well. I've got quite a few blog posts up, both on standard and on the contrib project at my blog. You've also got the MSDN blog. That's got quite a few really helpful blog posts. And I'll put all this up on the net later, and also it'll be available on the TechEd website. But that's the Office Development Portal, and that's got a heap of samples I was talking about before. If you're interested in getting started, it's got a heap of resources in there. The only thing it doesn't go into is all the release com object stuff, which I hope I've covered and you all go away understanding today. Okay, wrapping up. You can make sure you submit your evaluations. They're actually really important. If you do have any positives or negatives, leave the comments as well as the ratings. That really helps us as speakers in the future improve for you guys, because at the end of the day, if we do a bad job, you're not getting value. So it's all about adding value. And yeah, so participate in the whatever that is, the Tech Quest thing, and questions. Yes, the back. So the question was, isn't it preferable to use OpenXML rather than running the Office applications on the server? Yes, definitely. If you have the requirement that you can produce DocXs or XLSX, any of the XML formats, use OpenXL on the server. Problem is, a lot of companies still are standardized on 2003, and the only options with 2003 is you're still doing the old binary format, is pay for an expensive library or do Office automation on the server, which is shady terms anyway because the licensing is kind of weird, but yeah. So the question was, aren't most of the libraries pretty crap with OpenXML? I haven't actually used them in a lot of depth. I've played around with the OpenXML 2, one that Microsoft produced. It's not too bad. It's quite verbose in the way you do it. It's not really nice and succinct, but it does take away a lot of the complexities around it and saves you from doing a whole heap of the internal referencing that happens with the OpenXML. I think that's about the only help. Yep. Out the back.
Mm-hmm. Can that
So the question was, can you alleviate the complexity with all the callbacks in a single Ribbon XML class using the partial keyword? Yes, you can logically separate out those methods into sort of different partial classes and files, and that allows you to at least logically group things, but it's still, you're still looking at one class with everything in it, and it's still, because you have to hand it off when you're first starting up the app, you can't do dependency injection and those sort of things, and yeah, but that answers the question. You had a question down the front? Yep. Yeah, and that's why in the full exam, the question also was, should you, when you access the workbooks every time, does it keep incrementing that count? I'm pretty sure it does, because in this second example where I used, I did get it a different way. I think it does, but what the question was should you just use one variable up the top and keep referencing that? Yeah, if you do keep, if you put it at a field level, you can then dispose it at a class level and wrap the whole thing in a try finally and get rid of it all in the finally once you're done with all the manipulation. And that's the nicest way, but it's extremely verbose and quite messy. Is that it? Awesome. Thank you guys for coming.